This is Jay Sekulow. The Smithsonian Museum kicks out pro-life students. The ACLJ taking action.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Sekulow. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Jay Sekulow.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the broadcast. I want to give you a little bit of breaking news on a major issue for us. You know, we talk about the pro-life issue, and sometimes we're talking about legislation. Other times we're talking about work at the Supreme Court of the United States. Sometimes it's, in this particular case, it's students that want to stand for life. And in standing for life, what they're finding themselves in a situation, this has happened right now in Washington, D.C. It was after the March for Life was complete, a group of high school students, their teachers and chaperones, went over to the Smithsonian National Air and Space Museum. The police there kicked out the entire group of pro-life students and their chaperones for one reason and one reason only. Were they being impolite? No. Were they causing problems? No. What did they do? They had a pro-life message on their hats. They all wore, which is very common when you see students on these field trips, and I got it up on the screen right now. It said, it was a Catholic school, said Rosary, pro-life. That was it. And that became the basis upon which these kids were kicked out. And the police officers that were there for the Smithsonian went into this, you know, profanity-laced tirade against these students and their teachers. And the outrage here is, I'd like to see if the American Civil Liberties Union will join me in this lawsuit. They're the champions of free speech. They used to be. In the old days, they would have. I'm not so sure they would now. But this is a big deal. And they wore the hats, mostly, folks, because that's how they identified the students. You've seen when kids are in these events.
Well, I mean, they're coming after the March for Life. So yep. A lot of kids are not going home to change or going to a hotel to change. And it's their cause. It's their passion. It's why they're there in the first place. And they're walking through the Smithsonian museums, and they're asked not so politely to get out.
Well, here's what happened. The mother of two that we're representing this said this. She said her daughter just called from Washington, D.C. A dozen kids from their Catholic school in Greenville, South Carolina, just got kicked out of the Air and Space Museum for wearing a pro-life hat. They were told to remove their hats or leave. The daughter told the man that they had to wear their hats. That's how they find each other in the crowd. And then they were all just kicked out, including the teachers and the chaperones. By the way, the Smithsonian receives over $1 billion a year from the government. That means we're paying for this every single year, taxpayer dollars being used to do this. So, again, the fact that you carry a pro-life message into an area, and it's government-controlled here, does not give the government then the right to censor that message. If they had a rock and roll T-shirt on, it probably would have been fine. If they would have had some other statement, no problem. But it was pro-life. And that's viewpoint discrimination. It's content-based discrimination, and it's illegal.
And from what we've seen, it's not like this was something that incited, like a language that incited violence or even had violent imagery.
No,
this was simply
put it back up on the screen.
Rosary, pro-life. I mean, most people probably wouldn't even read it or notice it.
That's school color.
Yeah, again, like you said, they have to wear these things, make sure that the group stays. You've done this, you've all done it on a field trip or whatever it is. We have to wear your school colors or wear your school T-shirt that they hand out to make sure everyone is together, makes it easy for everyone to count. Sure, being pro-life in general can be controversial right now. Of course, it's a hot-button issue, but this was not something that really pushed any envelopes in terms of imagery or words. This is simply just pro-life, and that was enough to get them kicked out of one of the most popular tourist attractions.
Oh, in Washington.
In Washington, D.C.
I mean,
probably
there are
in the country.
People with all kinds of expressive content on shirts in Washington, D.C. I mean, it's Washington, D.C. By the way, these don't become speech-free zones. I haven't used that phrase since about 1987 because that was my very first case that was involving speech, and the government entity there decided they'd create a speech-free zone, and that's pretty much what they call it. And that's just not the way it works in the United States of America. We have the freedom of speech. And that includes pro-life students in Washington, D.C. That's not an enclave immune from the First Amendment. To the contrary, it's protected speech in an area where speech should be allowed. They're not disruptive speech. It was a passive message. And it was like Logan said, they just finished the march and they all came over there. They didn't have time to go to their hotel. And this is ridiculous. These kids wear these hats so that the teachers can quickly identify the students in a crowd. Absurd. ACLJ going to work on this. Your support of the ACLJ makes all that happen. You're hearing about it on the broadcast. We work on it because of your support of the ACLJ, ACLJ.org. Back with more in a moment.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.
After nearly 50 years, Roe v. Wade, the tragic ruling that manufactured a so-called right to abortion, has been overturned by the United States Supreme Court. This is the moment the ACLJ has been fighting for. It's the biggest victory we've achieved in our three-decade-long fight against the soulless abortion industry. And believe me, abortionists like Planned Parenthood are devastated. This victory would not have been possible without the steadfast prayer and support of ACLJ members like you. On behalf of the entire ACLJ, I thank you for standing with us against the abortion industry and helping us save defenseless babies. I thank you for making this victory possible. And I ask you for your continued prayer and support as we continue to battle against barbaric new abortion laws across our nation.
Broadcast, everyone. We're joined now by our senior counsel for global affairs and brand new book by Mike Pompeo, which everybody should be getting, called Never Give an Inch. I read the book in the last couple of days, and I'll tell you, it's, well, for me, it was like reliving history in a good way. But the book is fantastic. It's available at Amazon or wherever you get your books, and it's called Never Give an Inch. And joining us is our senior counsel for global affairs, Mike Pompeo. Mike, let me ask you a question. I want to start this, and you cover this in your book, and that is this whole classified document. Obviously, you're not talking about what's happened in the last few months, but it started with classified documents in former President Trump's possession. Then it was classified documents in the current president's possession when he was the vice president and when he was in the Senate. Now it's multiple locations. Now it's former vice President Pence. You know, I said the mistake that Merrick Garland made was appointing a special counsel. I've always said that statute should be, that regulation should be removed. It causes nothing but problems, because if you name a special counsel, at this point, the attorney general could say, you know what, this is obviously a much broader issue than I thought or that we thought. We got to handle it differently. Don't make everything a criminal case, but they didn't. But how do you see this playing out? You dealt with classified information. What's your thoughts?
I
don't think we'll have them. We'll go back to that in a moment. We'll find out what happened there. No problem.
Jay, I've got you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can now.
I've got you. First of all, Jay, thanks for reading the book, and I'll bet I hadn't thought about that. I'll bet you did relive some memories from our time.
I sure did.
I'll bet that's true.
Some more intense than others. Go ahead.
Yes, very focused on America.
Yeah.
Look, on this classified document issue, I much like the vice president, I would have had a secure facility in my home. We would have had thousands of classified documents. They're the responsibility of each of us to do them well, right? Put them where they're supposed to be, lock them in the safe at night, close the door. Somehow that appears not to have happened. My core concern here is really twofold. One, I hope Congress gets a chance to see what was in those documents, because we need to know if there was something serious and created any risk, and then go mitigate that risk. So the reason for classification is important. If these aren't, or if it's nothing, that's good news. Then we've got a separate problem. Second, make sure everybody gets treated the same. And I mean that in two ways. One, don't treat Trump one way, Pence another, and Biden yet another. These are serious things. When we have classified documents to be handled, everyone should be treated equitably. And then I write in Never Give an Inch about this very issue. When I was a young soldier, I handled classified information then, sure, too, 40 years ago. Make sure we don't just prosecute junior people. Whatever the standard is for proper handling of these, and whatever the accountability mechanisms, it should be the same for everyone.
So there's a very interesting section of this, and I, of course, I dealt with it, and that is you discuss Adam Schiff, who Kevin McCarthy has refused, along with Eric Swalwell, to put on the Intelligence Committee. I want to get your reaction to that move by Speaker McCarthy first. What was your thoughts on that?
Fundamentally the right decision. I'm very happy that Speaker McCarthy made that decision. I served with Adam Schiff when I was a member of the House Intelligence Committee, and then I dealt with him when I was at the CIA, and he was the chair of the House Intelligence Committee, or senior member on the House Intelligence Committee. We would send stuff to them, and it would come out. It was almost certainly him and his staff that leaked that information. And as I've written and talked about, that's just indecent. It's not right. He had a very sensitive position, and then he used that position to go out and tell lies to the American people that he had to have known weren't true about the Russia hoax. He kept saying, wait, folks, you're going to see all this. And you, of course, never saw it. We now know the only collusion appears to have been between McConnell, an FBI guy who's now clearly was on the payroll of a Russian oligarch. So working inside of Comey's yep. FBI, no evidence of collusion between Donald Trump and the Russians. And the hoax went on, and Adam Schiff was the primary deliverer of that hoax. It hurt our ability to execute our foreign policy, Jay.
I want to play, this is a clip we put together of Adam Schiff. It only takes about 45 seconds. And all the statements he made about the evidence in plain sight of collusion between the former president and the Russians.
So there's clear evidence on the issue of collusion, and this adds to that body of evidence. There's ample evidence of collusion in plain sight, and that is true.
Have Democrats found any evidence of collusion?
Yes, we have. You can see evidence in plain sight on the issue of collusion, pretty compelling evidence. And there is significant evidence of collusion. There is ample evidence, and indeed there is, of collusion of people in the Trump campaign with the Russians. I think there's plenty of evidence of collusion or conspiracy. All of this is evidence of collusion. There is significant evidence of collusion between the campaign and Russia.
On page 17 and 18 of your book, you get into this whole Adam Schiff matter where he was leaking. You know, my experience, and by the way, I laughed out loud audibly when I was reading this, when you'd talk about the president and talking about this whole thing with Mueller and the whole probe, and he called you my Mike, which I was my Jay. I don't know if that was a good thing or a bad thing. I'm still trying to figure that
either out.
Yeah,
only time will tell. Yes.
Yeah, we'll find out. I guess you may find out sooner than not. But my Jay always followed up with something that required a lot of sleepless nights for the next week.
That's about right.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. In writing the book, you're reliving the kind of the key moments of your time there, Never Give an Inch. You got this great story that's developed out of the Middle East. You had the Abraham Accords, which were great, totally changed the whole Middle East dialogue. And then you had the situation with the school in Doha, the Jewish day school that took place. Just opened in the last few days. That had to be a great moment for you when you heard that and read that this is how far it's come in such a short period of time.
Oh, it's amazing. It's completely amazing, right? When the Emiratis launched their fighter planes today, it's not to attack Israel. It's to fly in formation alongside them. I mean, it's just like an idea that's just crazy 10 years ago. And it took a lot of us. It's not just me. It was Jared Kushner, Stephen Mnuchin, Ambassador Friedman, Prime Minister Netanyahu, a great group of leaders who all figured this was a nutty situation and made peace with Israel. It's really a glorious change in history. And for everybody who's out there listening, it's less likely that your child, your yep. son, your daughter will have to go fight in the Middle East as a result of what we did. And that always, for me, was the most important thing, keeping our kids safe, keeping our country safe.
Yeah, I'm holding in my hand, for those that are seeing us on TV or on our social media platforms, this is a pen that is I was given as a gift in Israel when I was representing the Israelis the first time, before the International Criminal Court in The Hague. And it's obviously it's blue and white, it's the color of the Israeli flag. It was the 50th anniversary of the modern state of Israel's recognition. And, you know, when you think about the modern history of Israel, it's not a long time here. But I cannot think of another event that matches what happened with the Abraham Accords under your watch, because while you had other, you know, peace attempts, they never really materialized to anything. They could have, but they were always thwarted. This took a totally new approach by getting other allies involved, not just the Palestinian-Israel conflict, but getting the greater Middle East involved. And I think it's paid off unbelievable dividends already. And you discussed that at length in the book, by the way. It's called Never Give an Inch, Fighting for the America I Love. That seems to, that had to be a very, that whole situation in the Middle East has to be very gratifying.
Yeah, we did good work there. Good work for the American people there. We had Iran as isolated and as broke as they have ever been. We made it clear to the whole world, the United States, Israel, not an inch of daylight between us. We're going to work on the security issues. We're going to work on the important faith issues together. We're going to be partners all the way through. And that combination let these Arab nations come to see that their position on Israel was just didn't make sense. And now that's benefiting America. It's benefiting Israelis who are traveling to Abu Dhabi and to Doha and to Bahrain. And it's just really remarkable stuff. And I think that's going to stick because it turns out it's in the best interest of the people of each of those countries to work together, to do security together,
yep,
and to build their economies together.
Logan, I'm going to ask the secretary this, but is it correct that Adam Schiff, in announcing his next move politically, went to TikTok?
Yeah, he started on TikTok, and he really started on there not only to say what he was doing, but also to just have a deep sorrow and sadness that he'd been removed from the committees, and he just had this emotional,
and of all the platforms he went to,
of course, the one that everyone's saying to get off of.
So, Mike, you've been very concerned about China and concerned about TikTok, and that's what Adam Schiff chose to go on. Just, you can't make this stuff up.
You cannot make it up. It's absolutely mind-boggling. It's surprising he didn't make the announcement with Eric Swalwell and his girlfriend standing next to him. Right? It's just it is crazy to say you're going to try and attract people to this thing that I know Adam Schiff knows is presenting a risk to America. It's just, I think it tells you a little bit about who he is and what he values, and it's mostly Adam Schiff that he is interested in.
The book by Secretary Pompeo, our senior counsel for global affairs, called Never Give an Inch, A Fighting for the America I Love. It's available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever you get your books. We encourage you to get it. It is a great read. Fantastic book. Thanks for being on. Congratulations on the book.
Thank you all.
Great job. Thanks as always. Coming up, folks, we're going to get into a couple of other issues, some judicial nominees. Judicial nominee that didn't know what Article 2 of the Constitution was. If that was a Republican nominee, you know what happened when somebody did that? They were not confirmed because the White House pulled back their nomination. Doesn't appear to be the case in this one. We're taking your calls also at 800-684-3110, 1-800-684-3110. Don't follow us on TikTok, but they can follow us everywhere else.
Media platforms, and again, it's kind of a varying degree of evil, but you can find us on all of them, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and of course, broadcasting every day on Rumble.
No evil there.
No, free speech there at least. So you can find us on Rumble, but also just go to ACLJ.org, support the work, and see all the great content, the video content, the audio content, the blogs, the news stories, so much great content that comes on ACLJ.org each and every day, brand new material that you can read, that you can watch, you can share with your friends. And give us a call, 1-800-684-3110.
After nearly 50 years, Roe v. Wade, the tragic ruling that manufactured a so-called right to abortion, has been overturned by the United States Supreme Court. This is the moment the ACLJ has been fighting for. It's the biggest victory we've achieved in our three-decade-long fight against the soulless abortion industry. And believe me, abortionists like Planned Parenthood are devastated. This victory would not have been possible without the steadfast prayer and support of ACLJ members like you. On behalf of the entire ACLJ, I thank you for standing with us against the abortion industry and helping us save defenseless babies. I thank you for making this victory possible. And I ask you for your continued prayer and support as we continue to battle against barbaric new abortion laws across our nation.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the broadcast. Taking your calls at 800-684-3110, 1-800-684-3110. We had a situation where you have judicial nominees, and, you know, they go up before the Senate Judiciary Committee, and you kind of see what happens and see how prepared they are or not prepared. The headline on NBC News is Senator Kennedy stumps Biden judicial nominees with basic question about the Constitution. Let me play it for everybody. Take a listen.
Judge, on the far end, tell me what Article 5 of the Constitution does.
Article 5 is not coming to mind at the moment.
Okay. How about Article 2?
Neither is Article 2.
Okay.
Article 2, of course. Article 1 is the... This is where it gets... Folks, I mean, wacky. Article 1 is legislative power. Article 2 is executive power. Article 3 is judiciary. It is... I mean, if you're going to be a federal court judge, you should know that. So her nomination will go through, though, and she will be confirmed. Why? Because elections have consequences. Now, let me play you something else. This was the same senator asking a Republican nominee to be a judge this question.
Have you ever tried a jury trial?
I have not.
Civil?
No.
Criminal?
No.
Bench?
No.
State or federal court?
I have not.
Okay. Have you ever taken a deposition?
I was involved in taking depositions when I was associate at Wiley Ryan when I first came out of law school. But that was.
Have you ever how many depositions?
I would. I'd be struggling to.
You got the point. Okay, that nomination was pulled by the Trump White House. The judge, who is a current state court judge, is going to be, my guess is, confirmed. But Harry, this shows you, well, first of all, it shows you that when you lose control of the Senate, these things happen. Elections have consequences. But it shows you that there are two different standards. I mean, Senator Kennedy asked the Republican questions that showed that person was not qualified, and Democratic nominees that shows that person couldn't identify the constitutional framework, at least Articles 1, 2, and 3. If you want to give her a pass on Article 5, the amendment clause, okay, whatever. But Article 1, 2, and 3, come on.
It certainly is a problem, but the fundamental problem is there is insufficient vetting with respect to some of these nominees, and the blame for that goes to the Biden administration, number one. Number two, they failed to fully prep her for her, basically her hearing, and so we have an unprepared nominee, we have an unprepared administration. If you focus, for instance, on Article 2, it's important to note Article 2 gives the President of the United States the power to appoint an Article 3 judge. And so in many respects, this poor nominee undercut her own candidacy for an Article 3 judgeship.
That would have been interesting if he asked Article 3, do you know what that is? That never came up, did it? He went to 5 and 2. Because, you know, I said this, when we did the impeachment trial, it was one of those rare moments where you have like almost all three, all three branches of government. It's in the legislative process, and impeachment is a political trial, so that's Article 1 in the House and Senate, Congress. That's the legislative power, the branch. Then it was, of course, involving the executive, because the President of the United States is the executive, and that's Article 2. And then it's overseen by the Chief Justice of the United States, and he's an Article 3 appointed judge, which is a lifetime appointment. But it just shows you the nature of how this goes. Logan, what's going to happen is she's going to be confirmed. The other nominee, who should have been pulled, was pulled.
Yeah, I think that's what you said. Elections have consequences. Here's sort of the proof. It kind of doesn't even matter what is said. And you hear that from some of the Supreme Court, when the Supreme Court nominations are even happening, is a lot of the more traditional, and I'll say traditional in an interesting way, a lot of the more old school Washington politicians that are in there, whether they're conservative or not, just go, well, you know, you're going to make it through. We know you're going to make it through. So we'll question you. We're going to ask you questions. Of course, when it's a conservative justice, that may have to get confirmed. They'll grill them. They'll put them through absolute torture. But when it is a more liberal-leaning justice, you have the conservatives who go, you know, so we know that you're qualified even if we disagree with you. But that's just not how it works.
No, it's not
both sides.
It's not. Now, while we're talking about Washington, D.C., I want to talk about the fact that the IRS, Harry, is saying that the they're letting their people still work from home. We've dealt with agents, and they're working out of their house. It's just crazy. I make the joke, what are you doing, faxing tax returns to their home? Which I guess you are, because they still do faxes, believe it or not. But here's the interesting thing. There's a Republican GOP bill that would ban telework under, and you know, this kind of mass telework that's going on right now under a Republican bill until the tax return blockage is eliminated. Because right now they're saying they're a couple of years behind in processing. Also, the mayor of Washington has said that to the president, get these federal offices back open. You're killing the economic viability of D.C.
Absolutely. And so one of the things to keep in mind is all of the decision making theoretically associated with COVID has enormous consequences. The COVID emergency, at least in my opinion, President Biden probably disagrees with me, is over. And number two, what is truly important to the American people is getting their tax returns processed on time. And right now, apparently, that is not happening. And so I agree with the bill proposed by the Republicans, which would require them to return to work in the office. But we also need to hold those agents accountable when and if they do return. They really need to do the job for the American people. Keep in mind that the Democrats have passed a bill with Republican help, unfortunately, that would basically lead to the hiring of 80,000 new agents. And according to at least one survey, guess what? Most of the new audits will likely be aimed at middle and lower middle class individuals as opposed to the wealthy. So it strikes me that we've got our priorities wrong in this particular country, and the IRS is basically ground zero for demonstrating that particular point.
I think this is, you know, it's serious, folks, and it is affecting the economic viability of downtown, but it's also affecting the efficient operation of government. Let's go ahead and take a call. Well, we'll save it. Dan and a couple of others, stay on the line there. We're going to get you after the break. We've got a whole 30 minutes of broadcast coming up.
That's right. If you don't get the second half hour on your local station, if you're listening over the air on terrestrial radio, some of the stations don't carry the full hour. And if they don't, we're broadcasting live right now. Or if you're hearing us later on, we have the whole show available. You can find it right now broadcasting on ACLJ.org as well as on Rumble, YouTube, Facebook. You can find us on all those platforms live each and every day. So we do a full additional half hour coming up after this break. And we do have about three, four lines open right now. So if you want to be on the air, this is a great day to call Friday. If you have a question about some of the topics we've covered, give us a call, 1-800-684-3110, 1-800-684-3110. And we're going to be hitting some other topics
later. Yeah, we are. And people are calling also about the latest on the documents. We just had Mike Pompeo talking about that. Listen, I've said it. I'm going to say it again. Merrick Garland, you started this thing by appointing special counsel. Now you got two. You're going to probably have to have three. Why don't you get rid of all of them and say, you know what, we're going to take this back and get this resolved civilly, like it should be, a document dispute, and not have the former president, the current president, and the former vice president under suspicion or under a special counsel investigation. They haven't started the one on Vice President Pence yet, but who knows? This just tells you, folks, how important these issues are. ACLJ's front and center on all of this. We're the ones who got the FOIA into the National Archives and got expedited review. Support the work of the ACLJ at ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org. We're going to be back with more, including your phone calls at 800-684-3110.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.